Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello, everyone. You're welcome to another edition of the Game of Sunday podcast. Michael Lester here with you. Do you know what? At this time of the year, we still have lots of things to talk about. And we have Tomás Mulcahy with us here, as usual. But also, I'm thrilled that we're joined on this particular podcast by legend of Gaelic football, Mayo football, Cora Staunton. Cora, how are you? It's good to have you with us.
I'm good, Michael. Thank you. How are you?
Do you know what? If I got any better now, I get dizzy. Do you know what? I was saying to Cora before we start recording all this kind of thing, I know where Cora comes from in the sense that I know that neck of the woods between Ballinrobe and Castlebar and Loch Carra and all that kind of thing. What a lovely part of the world.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's a nice and peaceful world, surely, down here. We're a rural enough area, very central to all the major towns in Mayo, between Ballinrobe, Castlebar, Glamorgan, Westport. So, yeah, I'd like to say we live in central Mayo, but a lot of people say we live probably in the middle of nowhere. But, I certainly like it, and it's, certainly different from the bright lights of Sydney, I suppose, where I've been for the last number of years.
Well, that's it, exactly, yeah. And you have a famous abbey, up, you see, down there as well, not too far from you.
Yeah, Ballintober Abbey isn't too far away. So, you know, obviously, my club is a Cairnicone, but it's, you know, I don't know, back in the time, it's set up different to the boys' club, but our parish is Ballintober. So, yeah, our boys' club is Ballintober. It's the same club, Cairnicone and Ballintober. And, yeah, so the Abbey's pretty famous. A lot of famous people have got married over the years there, yeah. So still big numbers coming to it.
I was at a wedding, Cora, there a couple of years ago, just before the COVID thing and all that kind of stuff down there. Am I right in thinking, Yvonne Sulawan, former Rose of Tralee, is she from near you?
Yeah, she lives probably from my home house, probably lives a mile away from me. She was in the same class actually in national school as me, and her dad was my principal in school when I was in primary school in Cairnicone. So Yvonne came to our school actually, I think when we were in fourth class, she was in an Irish school in Castlebar because her mom in there. So Yvonne's dad, Art, was my principal for my time at school and taught me then when I think was in fourth, fifth and sixth. So would have been one of the main reasons that I was involved in sport. He pushed me into many sports at the time, whether it was Gaelic football or rounders or handball or basketball. And I suppose my first All-Ireland I ever won was under Art, an All-Ireland in Crow Park in the handball alley there when I think I was maybe 10 or 11 years of age.
You know what? I was nearly going to start this, Cora, by listing your achievements in sport, but I actually said to myself, if I do, the podcast will actually be over by the time I get to the end of it. So I'll just put down two. You have 4 All-Irelands, obviously, with Mayo. 11 All-Stars, yeah?
Yeah.
And National Leagues, obviously, and also with the club there, which was successful as well. But let me begin at the end, if you will.
Yeah.
Because this year, you decided to draw the curtain on your career in Aussie rules football.
Yeah, I suppose I made that decision. I suppose I'd done 6 years in Sydney. When I went over there in 2000, the end of 2017, it was probably only meant to be for one season. I ended up doing six seasons. And I suppose I always kind of said to me, if the enjoyment is gone, or if the body is slowing up a little bit or not able to do it anymore, I'd probably finish up. And yeah, it was probably the latter. I suppose it's time. The body only can take so much, and I suppose time stands still for no one. And I suppose I probably got the best out of myself over a long career. I was probably 41 when I retired, and I suppose a lot of people were trying to retire me when I was probably 29, currently. So yeah, I probably got a good extra 10 years out of it. But yeah, I really enjoyed my time in Sydney, and I suppose getting the opportunity to be a professional sports person probably was the highlight of it all. I suppose as a young person growing up, I've often told the story, I thought I was going to be playing for Manchester United and going to be Roy Keane, because that's who I followed when I was growing up. So, to get the opportunity to be a professional sports person for, 6 years will pinch towards the end of my career, obviously.
Can I just say to you, Cora, as a Manchester United fan, you're probably better than most of the ones that are on the team at the moment, but anyway...
I tend to agree with Jen. I'd struggle to probably know a lot of them now, even though I'd still follow them. But yeah, I suppose I grew up in the era of that Roy Keane, very good team, and the likes of the Nevilles and David Beckham, Paul Scholes, all of them. I was a huge fan from when I was probably 7 or 8 years of age, and yeah, I had Roy Keane posters all over my bedroom wall, when I was...
Great to hear.
I totally understand what Cora is saying here, because yesterday evening, because this time of my life, because I'm retired, I seem to have feck all to do with myself, and I was sitting down in front of the television at 4 o'clock watching Manchester United against Manchester City match from about 25 years ago. And do you know the way you're thinking to yourself, what am I doing with my life here? But a lot of those people who are playing, obviously, Gary Neville and blah blah and all those kind of stuff, So
it's interesting you say that, Mike, because last night I was roaming through televisions as well, and I got to Man United TV, and it was the 1999 FA Cup semi-final replay against Arsenal in Highbury, and Roy Keane was just majestic that day. But Cora, I don't know if you can remember that match. That was the Ryan Giggs goal that he got. And the shirt taken off, and he running around the pitch and stuff like that. Yeah, so yeah, it was interesting.
Tomas, I specifically remember that, because I remember watching that in a hotel down in Kenmare in Kerry, where myself and my wife took a weekend away. She didn't think she was going to end up watching football for the weekend, but anyway.
We sure do. We eat boring legs. Cora, let's go back to you. Could I ask you one question, Cora? In terms of your professional career, you mentioned the 6 years in Sydney. What was it like to go from, we'd say, the amateur status to the professional status? We hear so much about the modern game at the moment, that the GA is a professional game, or professional, but in an amateur status in terms of preparation. What was the difference by going from amateur to professionalism?
Yeah, there's not much of a difference in terms of, how fit and physically it'd be over here. Your level of fitness and, playing for intercounty is much the same. I suppose the biggest difference I found was the downtime and the recovery, that you didn't now have to get up at 7 o'clock in the morning to be at work and do a full day's work, and then try to train in the evening, or if you got up in the morning to do your gym session and do a full day's work. I suppose it was all the time that you had to to make yourself better. You know, I obviously been asked by a lot of people that go over now, can I make it? And I say, well, everything is there in front of you to make it. If you don't make it, it's your own fault, you know, because you have all the resources, all the time, all the staff there to make you better. So that was the biggest thing for me. You know, the challenge is obviously huge, but, you know, for me, it's just have all that time to spend to try and make yourself better. And that's, you know, not just on field, that was, you know, around education and learning the game, but, you know, also making yourself fitter, stronger, more powerful. And then obviously the skills, you know, you just have so much time. And then the resources and the facilities as well. Like, everything is in the one building. You know, it's a big facility and everything's there when you go in. You can go in at any time of the day and night. You know, you just swipe in and you're in there. And if you want a doctor, if you want a physio, if you need a sports psychologist, if you need a kicking coach or if you need a defensive coach, you know, whatever it might be, everything is in there in the one building. You don't have to be running around racing to get it. And I suppose the athlete is at the forefront, and they're just there to try and make you better. So yeah, it was probably all that. It was probably the biggest thing was having the time to make yourself better, where with Gaelic football, obviously you give so much time, but you have a life outside of it that you're trying to juggle as well. And no matter how well you juggle your life, it's at a time it can become a very hard balancing act. And you know, some days you go into inter-county training after a very heavy day's work, you're tired.
Yes.
Emotional or whatever, but you just don't have that over there. It's all about looking after yourself and being the best you can be for, you know, whether it's a 2 or 3 hour training session or if it's for the game at the weekend, you're always fully prepared and ready to go.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
And I'm right in saying, Cora, that when you were out in Sydney with Sydney Giants, your visa didn't allow you to get a job. Am I right in thinking?
Yeah, so over there, and that's the current situation with majority of players now. There's some players that, you know, because they've been there for a number of years, have got, you know, residency over there. But the majority of the Irish players over there aren't able to work. The only organisation you can work for is the club. So some clubs then might give you secondary work depending on, you know, your pay scale and stuff. So some girls might work in the club shop, or, you know, in my couple of years over there, you might be involved in coaching and learning the game and stuff like that. But majority of girls can only work. So in my case, I could only work for the Giants. In Ailish Constance's case, when she was with Adelaide Crows, she only could work with the Crows. So you don't have that secondary work that she can, you know, go outside and earn her extra money. So what it ends up being is that you're in the club all the time. If you're doing a bit extra work around the club, you're there all the time. So, as I said, you have every facility at hand and foot. If you want to do an extra kicking session, or if you want to do an extra gym session, or just even watching some vision and learning the game, you're always in there and everything is on hand and foot. You don't be waiting around for everything. So I suppose as a ladies footballer, you probably shouldn't have anywhere near the facilities, and certainly from a medical point of view as well. Obviously, I ended up having a couple of major injuries over there, but like medically you're looked after so well. Everything's done within a 24-hour period and sorted out, and you know your stage of recovery or when you're at.
When you say a couple of injuries, obviously Aussie rules football is tough. You had a broken leg, a broken nose, I think a broken finger, yeah?
I broke my leg, obviously. That was the major one in four places. I think I broke my nose 3 times over there, had surgery twice.
Jesus.
Broke my thumb, and then had kind of other injuries where you needed stitches and stuff like that. But yeah, no, I recovered from them all. That was the main thing. As I said, the care that you get over there from a medical point of view, even the day I broke my leg, to see that the plan that goes in place, you know, I broke my leg probably 2 or 3 o'clock on a Saturday, and you know, you have club people on to you, sorting out a surgeon to do your operation, and you know, you're not allowed, you know, they're sorting everything out. You're not just having any old surgeon doing your operation. You're having a plan. So yeah, just them things that you don't probably, you take for granted and stuff, but it's when you go over and see that the other side of the world, and the care that you get for the next kind of 6-7 months, you know, the resources that you're given to get back on the track and make sure that you're first of all back to full health and that you can do everyday stuff and then get back to playing is huge. So yeah, they're the biggest things for me that you probably don't get maybe here in the GAA. And again, that's because it's a business, and it's, you know, there's big money in the AFL, you know, whether it's men's or women, they're a very powerful organization in Australia.
Of course they are. In terms of yourself, in terms of going to Australia, that came, Cora, a little bit later in life, because I think you were in your mid-30s when you made that move.
Yeah, I was 35, and obviously the way it came about was a huge shock to me. You know, it was just, I met a guy randomly when I was an ambassador for the GAA out in Shanghai in China, and it was just a conversation. He worked for the Giants, Nicholas Walsh at the time. He was from Cavan. And that was in October, and 6-7 months later, I got an email from him saying, you know, there's a guy here that I'd like to talk to. He'd just been appointed the coach of the women's team, and Nick had worked with him. And yeah, phone call and emails later, and a couple of months later, you know, I went out for a trial, and kind of the rest was history. Came back home in the meantime. I won an All-Ireland with Carnacona and went back out then.
But when you say the rest is history, I read something about you where it said, going out on that flight, you weren't even sure whether you should be doing this.
Yeah, that was definitely sure. I suppose this was probably less than 48 hours after we won the Club All-Ireland in Dublin that evening. You know, I was won that on a Sunday evening and flew to Australia on a kind of Tuesday evening. So, yeah, I probably wasn't in a very good headspace that day, shortly after 2 days of celebrating. But yeah, it was just kind of, I had said yes, and I knew I was always coming home, because when I came back home to Carnacon that time, we were in the Connacht final. You know, I came back home on a Sunday, we were in the Connacht final the following Sunday. And yeah, we went on a bit of a journey and obviously won the All-Ireland. And then, yeah, I just was never sure of what I was doing. And yeah, it was a bit daunting, I suppose. You know, the older you are as well is probably a little bit more daunting. And then trying to go out and pick up a new sport, are you going to be able for it? Are you going to be fit enough? You know, you have all these doubts in your head. You know, I suppose you're going from maybe the top of your game here, or being one of the top players over here, now to being, you know, at the bottom of the pile. And, you know, you've probably teammates over there questioning you as well as, and who are you coming over here? What do you know about the game? So yeah, it took a little while to build the trust and respect of teammates and that. But, you know, that just comes down with hard work and training. And, yeah, I probably became very obsessed with the game early and was training, you know, 7 days a week. And at times, you know, the staff within the club were like, you can't be training all the time, you know, yeah, you're going to wear yourself out. But, yeah, I just, like anything else, I found it was a challenge. And as a challenge, you know, I wanted to be good. And tonight, I suppose I put my hand at, I want to be good. And yeah, that was kind of my motto. You know, the more I train, the better I get.
Tomás, do you ever regret or think about the fact that obviously there's a sort of a connection between Gaelic football and Aussie rules football, but obviously there's no connection between hurling and anything that happens in Australia?
No. And look, I suppose in terms of the professionals, status of the game, yeah, I played a bit of soccer in my time. You always kind of say to yourself, I played in an FAI under 14 cup final against with a team in Cork, Tramore Athletic, against Home Farm. It was handy enough for the soccer, but hurling was always the first love. Hurling and football was always the first love. And you began to say to yourself afterwards, when you see guys, the mass exodus that was there in Ireland at the time, people going across the water to play in different clubs in England, and Would there ever been an opportunity like you take the likes of Dave Barry, kind of dual status Gaelic football, and then come over there as well? It was just purely hurling in Cork. But Cora, just in terms of you mentioned there about, was there pressure on? Did you put pressure on yourself in terms of like a 35-year-old going over, not knowing the scene, getting into this game? Was there massive pressure behind you then in terms of, God, you have to perform here, you have to be good? And you obviously were used to that as a Gaelic footballer, but going over to a different professional standard like that, and then the welcome you got by your teammates, as you mentioned there as well. I mean, who's this girl coming over from Ireland? She's going to take someone's place here. Was that tough?
Yeah, it was. I found the first kind of 8 weeks very challenging when it was over. Obviously based on the back of, you know, the All-Ireland coming over. And then, yeah, the first few weeks, the heat over in Sydney was probably a big thing. It was in the middle of summer and it was probably 40 degrees and the humidity. Struggling with that. Yeah, and just picking up, learning the game. And then Christmas time came, and obviously being away from home, that's probably a hard time of the year. Yeah, and it just took me a while to settle in. And I tend to say anything until I feel that I have the respect to my teammates. So I just put my head down and tried to work hard. And it was mad. It was just, we had our first kind of practice match over there, and that was my first kind of scene into, you know, a proper game. And yeah, that day went really well for me. And I think, you know, that's when it all just clicked. They seen that I could play a bit, and I felt confidence in what I'd been training over kind of 8-10 weeks. And then, yeah, just from there, it was just like a flick of a switch. I felt, oh God, I'm well able to do this. And, you know, my teammates seen I was well able to do it. But yeah, I felt pressure, I suppose, being the first Irish over there and the club taking a huge gamble on me to come over. And yeah, you know, I obviously have high standards for myself, whether it's whatever sport I play. And, you know, I didn't want to be going over just being an average player. You know, I want to go over and get the very best out of myself or wear that ratio within the whole competition. Then, you know, that's what it was. But yeah, so I no matter what I do, I put huge pressure on myself. You know, whether I'm playing for Carnacone or I'm playing for Mayo or whatever I'm playing, you know, I want to be the best at it. And I suppose, you know, that's probably what drives me. And, you know, that's what has probably made me the sports person. But yeah, there was pressure on me, but I suppose once I knew I was training hard, and I'm like that over here, once I know I'm putting in, you know, full training, I know I'm going to get the best out of myself.
Brilliant. Michael, I suppose, not bad.
Go on, Nick.
Go on, yeah. Sydney. I'm Michael, just for the two of us. Not bad. Sydney, Christmas Day, lying on the beach. How better could it be, y'all?
Yeah, you know what? I think Christmas Day, I was out of the club practicing. We had a few days off, I think maybe 3 or 4 days off over Christmas. But I was the type, I was out of the club Christmas morning, making sure I was getting an extra session or two in to make sure I was getting up to speed with the game.
Tomás, I was actually just going to say to Cora, if you and me, Tomás, were out in Sydney,
yes,
I would be blowing a whistle at you at 4 o'clock in the morning to get out of the frigging bed, or even maybe to get into the bed and on to a training session. Laura, can I ask you a question here? You've been hugely successful, and Mayo ladies footballers have been hugely successful through your time, for All-Irelands that you have. How do you feel about Mayo in the men's football? Because they've been so close, and it hasn't happened.
Yeah, I suppose there's many feelings. Obviously, I know a lot of the lads, you know, that's played over the past kind of decade, 12 years, and have been there kind of through that period, you know, from probably 2012, you know, up to kind of the last year or two. You know, the likes of the guys that have retired over the last number of years, you know, the likes of the Lee Keegans, the Cullen boys, yeah, you know, things like that that I know quite well. And you know, I'm a Mayo fan at the end of the day, and your only thing is that you just feel so sorry for them, you know, that they haven't got over the line, because, you know, we've had some phenomenal players, you know, that I've mentioned, you know, and there's many more I can mention, you know, the likes of Shamie O'Shea, Keith Higgins, I could go on and keep mentioning them. And, you know, just the heartache that they've had, they've been so close on so many occasions, and it was so unfortunate in that period of time. You know, they came up probably against the greatest football team I certainly ever seen, you know, that I'd remember. And it's just so unfortunate that they've come up against them and just, you know, on them big days that maybe a little bit of luck didn't swing their way. But, you know, at the same time as a Mayo supporter, you know, the journey that we've been on with them over that period of time, you know, you'd never give that up, even though there's been so much heartache with it. There's so many counties that would love to be in Mayo's shoes that you'd be competing year in, year out. But no, they're a phenomenal group, and their resilience to come back year in, year out and put their shoulders to the wheel for Mayo has been phenomenal. Like, we've produced some of the best footballers, you know, in my time. You know, Lee Keegan certainly, I think, is up there with the greatest footballer that's been produced over the last, you know, 10 or 20 years. He's been phenomenal for the cause. So, yeah, it's just, you know, I suppose you just have loved to see the guys that have been there for so long get over the line. I'd love to have seen, you know, and hopefully it will happen, you know, in my lifetime. I'd love to have seen, you know, how the county reacts and what it'd be like.
Yeah.
You know, that fire whistle would blow in Croke Park and Mayo would be All-Ireland champions. You know, I just think it would just be absolutely crazy. And you know, all of that you just love to see. But yeah, unfortunately, it hasn't happened yet. You know, there's still obviously Mayo people always hold out hope, and there's hope that this team under Kevin McStay, even though there's been a lot of change and a couple of retirements so far, that he can, you know, mould this team into something and hopefully, you know, get over the line.
There's a fellow, Cora, doing a bit of work for me at the moment. He's from Mayo. And we were talking the other day, GA, obviously, and all that kind of crack. And he says to me, do you know what? He says, if Mayo won the fucking All-Ireland, we'd probably give it back.
Well, that's probably true. I don't know about that. But yeah, I just think the whole place would be in shock if we won it. As I said, I think the reaction of the Mayo public and what Castlebar would be like and what the towns of Mayo would be like. And, you know, I only can talk about my experience when we won our first All-Ireland, and, you know, it'd obviously be a lot different for the county if the men won it. But I never forget the time we won it. I was only 16, 17 years of age, and, you know, coming in over the border there in Shrewl in Mayo, and, you know, I think we came in maybe 6 or 7 o'clock that evening, but we didn't finish. Yeah. We went to every town and we finished in Ballyhaunas. I remember that night at 2:30 that night we arrived into Ballyhaunas. And just the Mayo supporters, I don't think people probably see it, but they're just so passionate. And, you know, I just remember the feelings and, you know, put the hairs on the back of your neck stand. Can you imagine, you know, if that happened to the men? I think you'd have everyone from every other county just coming down to see what it'd be like. So, as I said, please God, over the next few years, or, you know, certainly in my time that I'm around, that we get to sample it.
So I can tell you, Cora, for a fact, that if Mayo did win the All-Ireland, you'd have everybody in Galway going down to Mayo to celebrate with you.
You would, Leicester, you would not. Go without that.
No, you would. You actually
would not.
No.
Would die a death, right? I was just going to come in and say to Cora, every county in Ireland would love to see Mayo win the All-Ireland. You take it back to the days in terms of like Wexford in 96 and the hurling, dancing at the crossroads, Limerick when they won the first one back in 2018, and a 94-year-old, a 95-year-old man, and he with the McCarthy Cup after the match, I think, after travelling in from New York for the weekend. And like, I think that you mentioned that brilliantly, Cora. That's what I'd love to see, what it would be like in Mayo. How would the reaction be from the people? And the other side of it is Galway, my God, they wouldn't travel down. They'd absolutely hate.
No, sorry. No. Mulcahy. Mulcahy. Yeah.
You're not the only person in Galway. No.
Sorry, excuse me, Mr. Mulcahy. You do not know what you're talking about here. Because Cora, a moment ago, she mentioned Shrewl. If I said this on a previous podcast.
Yeah. Yeah.
If the Brits had drawn the borders straight, and there'd be some parishes in Mayo that would be in Galway, as other parishes that would be in Mayo, Shrewl, for example, in one of them, and all that kind of stuff. So it's shared football. It's not the big rivalry that you're talking about. I mean, we share borders. You know, we share borders. And naturally, if you drove, let's say from, let's say east Galway, Mayo to west, you'd be going in and back and over between Mayo and Galway and Mayo and Galway, maybe a bit of Roscommon, etc. and so forth. So that's rubbish, Mulcahy.
No, sure. Every county is has a border. Every county is tied to another county at some way. And the right.
No, that's no. Sorry. Excuse me. In your county, the hurling is on one side of it, right? The football is in West Cork, more or less, and that kind of borders on Kerry. So that doesn't count what you're talking about.
I think there would be a certain part of Galway. Obviously, I was involved with Galway Camogie this year. I think the hurling side of Galway, and from talking to them, you know, that side, you're Aston Rye, you're Ballinasloe, Loughrea.
Yeah.
I think their football probably isn't that strong in parts of Galway. You certainly would have them come to celebrate, you know, Mayo, and would love to see them. And then I suppose there's such a huge population of Mayo people living in Galway as well. That
of course
would,
there is, yeah.
You'd have a certain amount of people in Galway that, you know, would be happy they won, and you'd have a certain amount that wouldn't. And, you know, it'd be the same here if Galway had won the football, you know, when they played 2 years ago. There'd be a certain amount of people at Mayo that'd be happy, and then there'd be a lot that wouldn't. So it's
but you're,
it's
but you're dead right, Cora, from the point of view that because Galway is a divided county, and I said this on a previous podcast. South Galway, or as we call it, East Galway, is hurling.
Yeah.
You know, North Galway is football, which is Tuam, Mount Bellew, Bloody Clan, whatever. Corrigan, Clare Morris, Castle, you know. So it's all, anyway, that's, we're getting into it. Can I ask you a question? You've been on over the, since you kind of stepped back a little bit, on the Sunday game. Have you enjoyed that?
Yeah, I have. I've really enjoyed it. You know, it's obviously a bit daunting when you come in first, but I suppose like any GAA player, you know, if you're not playing, you're always watching it and you enjoy watching it and getting, I suppose, to commentate on it and give your opinion on it is huge. Yeah, and obviously the guys that you're working with as well, you just, you know, you learn so much off them and they're so helpful, you know. You know, I've learned so much off the likes of Tomás O'Shea and Kieran Whelan and people like that, so... Yeah, no, it's been very good, and it just gives you a different lens on it. I suppose when you're involved in playing, you know, you have a different focus, and you know it's all about winning, and maybe you don't look at it from the same lens. But yeah, when you're sitting and watching it from a different lens, you know, bar probably when Mayo are playing, you try to be a little bit non-biased, but that's probably hard. But no, it's been brilliant, as I said. But you know, it's a thing that probably takes you a little bit of time to get into it. But yeah, no, I really enjoyed this year. And as I said, you know, you're working with people that, you know, are very, very knowledgeable of the game and very helpful in everything they do as well.
I don't know if you recall or remember, did you ever play Joanne Cantwell, obviously the presenter of the Sunday game, played fullback for Dublin? Do you know that you ever play against her?
No, I never came up against her at all. No, I'd have known she'd have played, but no, not in my time. I've never come up against her. All right, so yeah, maybe we're better off if she played in the full back line. I played in the full forward line. That might be some battle.
You were probably lucky.
Will you ever manage a team, Cora?
Have you any ambitions?
Yeah, I probably will in time. You know, I came back from Australia just at the end of Christmas this year, and you know, I got involved with Galway Camogie very early in January. I think I went in with them on the 9th of January, kind of as performance coach, and I'd done a bit of coaching with their forward line, even though I had no background in Camogie. But I find the principles of all the games, whether it's AFL, Gaelic football, whatever it might be, they're all the same. You know, it's all movement and stuff like that. So I really enjoyed my time at Galway Camogie. I really enjoyed like seeing how a management setup, you know, happens, and you know all the different pieces of it. And I suppose when you're on the opposite side of the fence and you're a player, you probably don't see all that. So, and yeah, working with the girls this year was, you know, it was hugely impressive. Trying to get the best out of them, you know, I've probably learned a lot. You know, maybe I'd have probably liked to have known, you know, my time is playing that, you know, everyone's different, you know, every whether it's male or female, they're, you know, everyone's wired differently. I'm certainly wired differently to a lot of players. And, you know, to try and get the best out of each individual, you have to work with them and figure out how their motivation. And, you know, as I said to the girls, some of them, you know, might need a lot of, you know, encouragement and, you know, a hand around the shoulder. And then some might need the opposite. And it's to figure out that of, you know, 35 parents, how they're motivated and stuff. So yeah, it's a big job. It's a big commitment. I think there's certainly, it's the thing you just don't throw yourself into. There is a learning phase in it. You know, I've obviously done coaching, you know, in school teams here and in our club and stuff like that. But I think inter-county management is a very big task to take on, and I think you have to be well prepared for it. So yeah, I'm kind of, you know, liked my kind of apprentice of working with Go with Camogie, and I'll certainly go along that lines, you know, over the next couple of years. And yeah, hopefully down the line I would certainly like to get into management. You know, I have a very big coaching head on me, and you know, even when I'm playing with my club, you know, a lot of the time on field my coaching head is you know, on, and you know, you're trying to coach girls while you play as well. So yeah, I enjoy it. I enjoy being involved in a team, and I suppose I've known nothing else since I was probably, you know, 10 years of age.
Can I say to you, Cora, just to wrap up this podcast, and thank you so much for talking to us. If you do go down that line, you will be a brilliant coach. I have absolutely no doubt about that.
Thank you.
Cora Staunton, Tomás Mackay, thank you so much for being with us here on the podcast this week. We'll talk to you again sometime in the future. But for the rest of it, take care.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.